Chapter 4. Evidence. Genkai. No evidence of recent DE activity. Students fine. Banshees pests. Leaving Ireland. Send money. Hiei. Hot rain pounded upon Kurama, the ruined silk of Botan's kimono sleeves flapping in the wind, slapping at him. Her ponytail, a stinging, drenched whip, lashed at his eyes and face. Her oar skittered and lurched, thrown about by high winds, and no doubt only her expert piloting was keeping them aloft. No doubt, except that Kurama wasn't entirely sure which way was up. The only reference point in the green-black mass of roiling clouds was Botan herself, bright pink and blue and white in the occasional flash of lightning, and the oar's haft solid in his grip. Thunder rolled, and the oar plummeted, flung momentarily below the clouds. Far below, a river wound, barely visible in the rain. Botan turned and shouted, almost into Kurama's ear, "This the place?" "I don't know," Kurama shouted back. He needed to see the mountains, the horizon, something other than a half-second glimpse of a river bend. Botan twisted back, bending low to her oar, and shoved. Kurama could feel the strain in the wood under his palms as she fought the wind to get below the clouds once more. A gap opened up, an emptier black in the fog, and Botan shot through. Kurama blinked rain out of his eyes, squinting at the land's contours. Features, Inari, I need to see. Lightning cracked, rippling across the clouds in a white-hot flash. Kurama blinked the after images from his eyes. This is it, he yelled, his words drowned out by an explosion of thunder. This is it, Botan, he shouted again. Land. What? Land. She shot him an incredulous look, then gritted her teeth and bore down on the oar. The ground spiraled up to meet them, tilting wildly from side to side. Howling wind sent them spinning in all directions, flipping them entirely upside down at one point. And Kurama slid a sickening several inches before Botan snapped the oar back underneath them both. However the hell Botan managed to stay on sitting side saddle, Kurama wanted that technique. 3 meters above the twisting forest, Kurama dug his rose from his hopelessly matted hair. Rose whip, he called, wind stealing the sound away, and he lashed the whip into the treetops. It caught on a branch somewhere deep within. The connection was enough for Kurama to pour power through and wrench open a gap between the branches. He reeled them in carefully as Botan fought to keep them from smashing against the trees. 4 meters down, he let the canopy close once more, cutting off a significant amount of wind and pouring rain. He let the whip vanish, and Botan guided the oar down to a relatively soft landing. They sat silent for a moment on a fallen tree, catching their breath. Then, finally, "You owe me for that, Kurama-san." Kurama flexed his hands gently, expressionless as he stretched muscles cramped from his death grip on the oar. "My apologies," he murmured. "I should have inquired about the weather in Reikai today." It was a singularly Japanese statement, putting the blame firmly on Kurama himself. Nobody bothered to make weather reports outside the human world. Botan waved it off. "Get Kawenma-san to replace my kimono and we're even," she said, flapping a drenched sleeve in demonstration. "Done." Kurama pushed his hair out of his face, grimacing slightly at the tangled mess. "Are you going to go back to work, or..."
"I think I'll stay until the storm's blown itself out," Botan replied cheerfully. She glanced around, then down at her formal sandals and pristine white socks. "But if it's safe enough here, I think I'll stay put."
Kurama smiled. "It's safe. Except for the predatory plants. As long as you stay put." He turned away, dropping a random human world seed next to a tree and triggering it to sprout. If he got lost, unlikely as that was, it would suffice as a beacon if he got within range.
Hey, wait! What am I supposed to do while you're gone?
Kurama shrugged, barely glancing back over his shoulder as he slipped away into the Reikai forest. I'm sure you'll think of something.
Draco lounged, bored out of his mind, next to Shizuru on an overstuffed and horribly plebeian couch. He'd been staring at the photo album box, called a TV, for the past 3 hours, but the different pictures, though interesting at first due to their soundtracks, had long since lost what little appeal they had. The current photo was something extremely noisy and overdramatic called Iron Chef. What possessed Muggles to photograph house elf work in the first place? Draco would never understand. Watching it was even more incomprehensible. Doing the work? Well, Muggles were little better than animals as it was.
I'm home, Rinku shouted, flinging the door to the Kuwabara apartment open. It thumped against the wall, followed by two more thumps as he kicked his shoes off.
Welcome home, Shizuru said, getting up. How'd it go? Draco let his head loll away from the TV. The brat stood beaming in the entrance to the main room, wearing a rather limp-looking sailor suit and cap, and brandishing an old, stiffly tailored leather backpack. At least it wasn't dripping this time, Draco thought, feeling his gorge rise.
Great! Piece of cake, Rinku answered, handing the backpack over to Shizuru.
She raised an eyebrow, lifting the pack to peer at the bottom. Did you drain it this time?
Yes.
Drain does not mean stick the head in upside down, she reminded him.
Erk.
Draco swallowed hard, bile burning in the back of his throat. Rinku grinned ruefully, rubbing the back of his head.
Can it mean wrap the string really tight around the neck and stuck it in upside down in a trash bag?
At Shizuru's frown, he quickly added,
there's just no time usually. It's hard enough getting the guy away to fight without humans watching.
She tossed the bag back at him. Sink now. Wash the blood out before it starts leaking. Rinku rolled his eyes and stomped off to the kitchen, as Shizuru headed for the phone. I'm going to have a talk with that guy about demanding evidence. Draco buried his head under a throw pillow and tried to pretend his stomach didn't exist. Yusuke was smoking in the park when Harry found him, sitting on the merry-go-round, hair ungelled and t-shirt sleeves rolled up. If he was a spy, he wasn't doing a very good job of blending in.
Potter? Yusuke said, acknowledging him.
Yurameshi, Harry said, just as neutrally, hands in his pockets. Silence. Yusuke took a long drag on his cigarette, held it a moment, and blew smoke lazily into the still air.
Look, Harry finally blurted, I've been trying. I know a werewolf. I don't have a problem with dark creatures, but...
He trailed off. Yusuke and Kurama were friends, after all.
But, Yusuke pressed,
a werewolf can't help it, you know? Kurama didn't go psycho. He didn't... Well, he did change, but not up here.
Harry tapped his head. Right?
Right. The Yoko is Kurama is the Yoko.
Yeah, that was the problem, wasn't it? And he's been nice to Neville, and you guys are friends, and I want to think he's a good guy, but...
Yusuke dropped his head in his free hand and muttered, but he's an ooh-so-evil Slytherin.
And he just executed that other guy, Harry said hastily.
But, well, yes.
You know, we really hate your house system, Yusuke said conversationally, stubbing his cigarette out on the ground. Bet you wouldn't have a problem if he was a Ravenclaw or something.
That's not true, Harry snapped. Have you ever seen him kill?
No.
Yes. Harry sputtered to a halt.
What?
I've seen him kill. Yusuke turned a flat gaze on Harry. And I've seen him nearly get killed. And he's seen the same with me.
What was there to say to that? Oh. Yeah. Oh. Harry resisted the urge to grab his wand. Not like he was allowed to cast spells over the halls.
The same, huh?
Yusuke shrugged. Being a demon's a constant war. Fighting him's the same. So yeah.
So you just, what, pick fights with demons at random?
He got a narrow-eyed glare for that.
No, Yusuke drawled. You do like the Aurors. You know, your cop guys who have license to kill in a firefight.
Harry winced at that.
You go out on missions, some guy attacks, you fight back. You survive. You learn to deal.
How?
Then Harry's brain caught up with Yusuke's words.
Wait, no. Missions?
I'll get back to you on that. But yeah, missions. And survival. Not fun. Promise.
Silence fell once more. Harry shifted uncomfortably as Yusuke leaned back against the go-round's bars and stared up at the clouds. Was the conversation over, or...
Movement flickered at the edge of Harry's vision, and he turned his head.
Oh, bloody... Dudley and his gang were coming into the park.
I'd better go, Harry muttered, edging away from Yusuke.
You don't want to be seen with me.
And he'd rather not be around Dudley.
Eh?
Yusuke's gaze flicked back down to Harry.
Just, you don't know me and you're not a freak, okay? Or a wizard.
Yusuke's eyes narrowed.
What the hell are you talking about?
Harry just shook his head.
Nothing. I gotta go.
And with that, he hurried off, hoping Yusuke wouldn't call him back. Yusuke didn't.
A surprising number of students lived hidden among the worn-down mountains of Cumbria, just south of the Scottish border. This wasn't what had delayed Hiei. A couple of missing students had, but it turned out that both had just been on overnight visits elsewhere, and had shown up late the next day, in high spirits and excellent health. Plus, there had been thin, tattered layers of old protective magics laid haphazardly on the stone and plaster cottages. The damn things, reeking of neglect and forgotten meanings, stung in a way that the far better kept spells over Hogwarts, Diagon Alley, and Hogsmeade did not. So, by the time he reached Lancashire in mid-morning on Friday, Hiei was glad to be seeing the last of Cumbria. Even better, the day was bright and warm. Not that temperature had much of an effect on him, but being dry did. Pulling a map from his pocket, Hiei checked his bearings, then darted off southwards. 2 hours later, Hiei stood atop a telephone pole, looking across the street and down over high, vine-covered walls surrounding the Longbottom residence. The house itself was small, with few windows, and would have been the right size for a family of four had it not had two extra ramshackle stories added on at some point. Ivy crept up the walls, tendrils snaking towards the third floor. The tiny garden was overgrown, almost wildly lush. Hiei slid from the phone pole onto the protruding branch of a nearby tree, and climbed another branch stretched out over the road. Crouching on the rough bark, he peered more closely. Something thumped in the house, and a spindly old woman, straight-backed and wearing a shapeless brown dress, marched out the front door, locking it behind her. Tensing, Hiei stayed perfectly still, a shadowy lump on a high branch. Humans rarely looked up, and observed the woman. Despite the sunshine, she carried an umbrella under one arm, letting it whack indiscriminately against bushes, branches, and the door itself. Over her other arm, a large, woven, empty bag hung lifelessly. It looked like a shopping bag of some sort to Hiei. On her head sat a pointed black hat with a stuffed vulture on it. She wove deftly through the heavily overgrown front path, making her way to a nearly hidden gate in the outer wall. However, rather than passing through when she reached it, she pressed herself against the gate, dug a wand from her bag, and vanished. Hiei raised an eyebrow. Apparition. Definitely the right place. But where was Neville? Around back? Using the convenient surrounding wall would be the easiest way to look, but everything about the house told Hiei it was likely to be covered in the same crumbling, stinging wards that Cumbrian wizard homes had. So instead, he leapt to a nearby tree, then another, slowly circling the house as best he could. He stared intently at the thick masses of greenery, searching for any sign of Neville himself. If the boy was home, given the weather, he'd be outside. Nothing. Just plants straining towards the sun and the house. Perhaps Neville wasn't home, but something's not right here. Frowning, Hiei settled in the branches to watch. He'd meant to look for Death Eater activity in downtown Manchester that night, but something about the Longbottom residence niggled at Hiei's instincts. It didn't take long for him to figure out what. Just half an hour had passed when something pale flashed in a third-story window. Hiei's gaze flicked to the flutter of movement, and he watched as Neville slumped into an unseen chair, staring out and down at his garden. Neville Longbottom was indoors? Now? The branch Hiei sat on creaked, straining, as Hiei leaned back on it. Indoors. The boy was indoors, and from the state of the garden, he might not have set foot outside since the holidays had begun. That was... Neville brushed a fingertip over the glass, and the garden rustled, as if a breeze had passed through. Hiei abruptly noticed the strain in the branch under him, straining not against his negligible weight, but towards the house. The trees surrounding the property leaned, ever so slightly, off-center, towards the house. The shrubs, vines, bushes, everything in the overgrown garden stretched towards the house. The very ivy on the house twined heavily over it, peeking in the direction of the window Neville sat in. Fuck. What was he thinking? No, scratch that. Neville looked miserable. This couldn't be his idea. Hiei pulled a crumpled scrap of paper and a pencil from his pocket, scribbling quickly on it as he nudged at his scarf, prodding Yuki awake. Longbottom, passed by. You need to practice more. Your yard's a wreck. Kurama makes patterns with vine stuff. Try it. Jiganshi. Earn your keep, he told the cat, rolling the paper and offering it to her. She stared at him in open disbelief. He picked her up, off his shoulder, directing her attention across the road. Kid in the window, take this to him, and get some random leaves from the yard while you're at it. Maybe he'll feed you. That would be one less chore Hiei had to do. The mention of food mollified her, but she still licked herself a few times, just to show that this was her idea rather than Hiei's, before delicately taking the roll of paper and sauntering off down the branch. A leap took her from the branch to the top of the wall, then she vanished into the garden. With her gone, Hiei took the time to get out a proper, clean sheet of parchment and a ballpoint pen, swiped from a gas station with bad food somewhere in Ireland. He smoothed it as best he could on the branch and began to write a letter to Kurama. Kurama, reached Longbottom's today. You've got a problem coming. The kid hasn't set foot outside since the train. Don't think it's his idea. Kid looks miserable. The garden's gone wild and is creeping up the house. Guessing this is bad sign. Sent the cat with a note. Can't get close. The place is littered with shards of old wards. Smuggled a few clippings to work with. Told him you do patterns. You've taught him enough not to overdo it. Reply within next 2 weeks. Can shift planned route to return by then. If later, forward any suggestions to Kuwabara. Hiei.